Honorable Member, ladies and gentlemen, let us start our meeting. I see that we do have a quorum, and there are some apologies. One apology is that of the Minister of Mineral Resources, who said that she is in a cabinet meeting. She is unable to make it to the meeting. She wanted to be here. The second apology is that Honorable Bigani is going to join us later. She started in another meeting. Who else is there? Who has apologized? Honorable Advocate Schmidt. Honorable Moss, Honorable Poho from Cove. Those are the apologies that we did receive. And with those, we do have the quorum in the meeting. The purpose of the meeting today is to deal with the five annual reports that were tabled by the state-owned enterprises reporting in this ministry, and that we did engage on those reports. But before going in there, we would like to deal with some issues, some announcements that affect our work. As you are aware, that on Friday we did schedule a briefing by the company called SA Bullion. They wanted to come and have an audience with us to brief us on the work they are doing in the industry. We gave them that space. And they wrote us a letter in response to the confirmation of the request that they made to the committee. Their letter is dated the 18th of February, addressed to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee. And they say our correspondence dated the 15th of February bears reference. And effectively, they say SA Bullion Investor Services regrets to advise that this oral presentation to the committee has to be rescheduled to a later date when our corporate affairs executive has returned to South Africa. She will return to South Africa in April and will revert to your office. Kindly convey our apologies. Which means, therefore, that this meeting was scheduled for Friday. And given the fact that they say they are not coming, members must be aware, although there will be something in writing from the secretary that cancels that meeting, because we won't meet for the sake of meeting. We were giving them space for them to address us on the issues pertaining to the gold industry. So we will reschedule. Once they come back to us when they are ready. That's one issue. The other issue is that after tea, we do have a set of minutes for the meeting of the 19th. They are still in the process of the 17th of February. They are still in the process of being reproduced. They will be circulated to us. It's expected that today we go through those minutes, and we correct them, and we finally adopt those minutes once satisfied that they reflect the proceedings of the day. Therefore, honorable members, without further ado, we would notice that we do not have the department among us. Surely they might have been under the view that the committee is going to be considering these reports and take the necessary decisions on the report. Now, we have set aside almost the whole day to allow members enough time. And as we have indicated when we were adopting the program, we don't necessarily have to go through to till the end of the day. It will depend on when we finish our work, and then the meeting will be adjourned. We would start with the presentation made by Geoscience, and so that we can then be able to raise issues there if there are issues that we believe require us to further deliberate over. The Council for Geoscience, they gave us that presentation where they were informing us on about the work that they are doing, and also giving us their intentions in terms of the work that they would do into the future. So I'll allow members to then comment, deliberate over the matter, and eventually adopt. With the understanding that when we receive the department's strategic plan, we would expect that the state-owned enterprises will also give us their more concrete plans in terms of the impact of the work that they are going to do on the the five national objectives, as we all are aware of the direction that we are seeking to take as a country. Also, we would have to create a space as well to deliberate over the refocusing of the mandate of the state-owned enterprises. For instance, when we look at geoscience, we need to see whether the work they are doing and the work that they seek to do does make a contribution towards the direction that we want, so that when the time arrives in terms of looking at the mandate of the state-owned enterprises, we are better positioned because we shall have understood the work that they've been doing. So, honorable members, let me open the floor for your comments, your engagement with this report, and if there are questions that would arise, we would then refer those questions appropriately. Thank you. If you want a moment to refresh your memory on these presentations, we can allow that for you, honorable members. I'm in your hands, so let me be guided by your views. Do you want some more time, honorable Dexter?
For the most part, I think the report we're giving and the presentation, you know, really shows that this entity is functioning, you know, it's well governed, doing good work. The only issue I think that I had was this question of the sealing of unsafe mine holes and the question of the entrance, you know, that illegal miners are using. That's the only area where I thought perhaps we need to just say something about the need for that to be fixed up. But other than that, I mean, I'm quite satisfied with the report they gave.
Sitting of unsafe mines and what? And sinkholes.
Any other comment? The other issue that would arise from this report, I agree with Honorable Dexter that the entity is well run. It's a very thorny issue that, as the committee, we are grappling with. And it's part of one of the priorities that we have to look into. The research work that they are undertaking on finding workable solutions to deal decisively with the continuous fall of ground occurrences in the mines, which accounts for at least more than 41% of the accidents and fatalities in the mines. Because this fall of ground, you know, which would be as a result of seismicity, as a result of gravity-induced fall of ground, as a result of tremors of the soil. It's an issue that is an old age kind of an occurrence in the industry since mining started in the 18th century. At all material times, a big number of fatalities in the mining industry are as a result of this fall of ground, rock bursts, and so forth. Now, the geoscience has indicated that they are doing some investigation and also drawing international experiences to be able to develop a technology that will enable the industry to at least detect the occurrence of seismicity early before it happens, to also be able to have systems built in that will have warning signs to the workforce underground, so that as and when those warning signs appear, then workers can be evacuated from the work area, which I think it's a matter that we as the committee will have to pay more focus so that we reduce this the fatality rate. Because, for instance, now the industry is accounting for plus minus 200 deaths per annum. Yes, it's an improvement from the 90s, because in that decade, the industry was responsible for more than 1,000 people killed in the industry. And that has come down through very good work that was done by Mine Health and Safety Council and other entities. And indeed here, the problem the geoscience raised was the funding for that research work. At the time, they informed us that they are looking for a sum of 20 million rand for them to can be able to complete this research work, and that they were getting difficulties in getting such funding approved by National Treasury. Then we made an undertaking as the portfolio committee that we will pay attention to the issue and assist them going forward. But unfortunately, fortunately for us, when we listened to Mine Health and Safety Council, they also informed us that SIMREC is also involved in research work as well, and that they have not seen financial challenges in that regard, because our view was, why would there be difficulty in accessing funding for such an important area of work when you have an industry that generates huge sums of turnover in the industry? Of course, from every time we engage them, they make a clear commitment in wanting to find a lasting solution that would result in a drastic reduction of levels of fatalities in the industry. So we were not sure why would they not fund such an important research work. But then SIMREC indicated that they do levy the industry, and that the industry does pay, and indeed there's a possibility that the 20 million rand that geoscience is looking for could be found. And I would want us to maybe resolve that as part of this adoption of this report, that geoscience be directed to engage Mine Health and Safety Council and give us back the report in as far as the availability of funds to undertake this research work that would assist us to curtail the fatalities in the mining industry. I would like to hear your comments on that before making it a resolution of this committee. Honorable Lucas, Honorable Matibela.
I may be incorrect, but if I remember correctly, when we went out to the mine, that incident of the rock fall, it was also partly due to the workmanship, because when the senior inspector came, he had stopped them from going in there. So it looked as though there was something that could have been done, but which was not done. So I think we also got to look at that and say the workmanship must be equal to the task.
Counselors, and they show for safety of people to be kept alive where it's dangerous to go to. Those are very good things which they are doing, and I agree with you, Chairperson, when you say money, their budget, they don't get money. I think that is a very good thing to do for the department to give them money to do this, continue with the good work which they are doing. Thank you.
Honorable Ngelo.
Chairperson, I agree with everybody, but I think we need to have another report in this sealing and unsafe mine holes. Yes, they've done everything. They've delivered pamphlets, but did those pamphlets work? And they have this these posters which say stay away. Did people stay away from that? I think we need to know what is happening.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks to the new technology that they're working on in trying to detect the occurrence in these mines, which will help these mines actually not to harm miners there. But I think I will agree with the previous members that we'll need to get a report about the occurrence. Did they follow the instructions after all those, after distributing those pamphlets and all that? I think as a committee we need to get that report from them. Because I remember we even mentioned to them that we needed to get a report. So I think we should get a report. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think, yes, we will write to the entity for them to update us, but also in our program where we provide for oversight. When we go to do oversight, some of this information we will have to demand it. Honorable Lucas, I think the issue you have raised pertaining to the workmanship, particularly using the example of the Impala accident. There, the committee must spend some time. We are going to create a space for us to engage seriously on matters of that nature, because we would need a paradigm shift in the industry that some of these deaths, as we keep on, you know, mentioning, are preventable in their very nature. This one of Impala was due to negligence. You know, as you correctly pointed out, the report we received was that the first line supervisor took a decision to strengthen the pillage in the work area in that shaft. But then the mine, the shift boss, who is the main authority for that workforce, when he arrived 3 hours later, condemned that first decision, and in fact said to the first line supervisor, you should have not have taken this decision. In fact, these workers must be evacuated. In the process of evacuating them, then the ground fell and nine people died. So it tells you clearly that there you have a problem of human error, and to an extent we must also go deeper in terms of what kind of training do these first line supervisors receive. Because even without that supervisor, blasting did take place in that shaft. There was an inspection that was done in the morning, and the person who conducted the inspection gave a go-ahead that the place is safe to be worked in, and then this accident occurred. So I am saying a paradigm shift is necessary. It means we must go deeper into production methods to look at what kind of instructions go at what juncture and who is responsible. For instance, why would it take 3 hours for the shift boss to make a turn in a work area, particularly when they know that there have been blasting that has taken place in that workplace? But also secondly, we need to look at in which other best way can we then deal with the issue of the fall of ground. For instance, this, causal factor of force of gravity, the gravity-induced fall of ground, is not necessarily related to seismicity. It's related to the methods that are applied in the actual operation. Because they would have an area as wide as this room with a very weak pillage and continue to plunge workers into that hazardous situation. Whereas if you have the work area, for instance, in terms of this room, then you have little or no serious hazard in terms of that fall of ground as per gravity-induced. Because then it means your pillage would be strong enough, the cliff that would be hanging would be supported enough for it not to fall. Of course, we know that will have an impact both on workers and as well as on the company. They will lose their production targets, which will curtail their profit margins. They will also, workers will lose their production bonuses. But also choices must be made. What is better, the life of the worker and the profits as well as the production bonus? I think these are some of the issues that the committee must go into deeper, particularly in engaging the Mine Health and Safety Council in this regard, so that when we set those standards, if we have to regulate, so be it, because at the end of the day, our interest is to find lasting solutions in terms of curtailing, the fatalities. But I think as far as the geoscience is concerned, we are raising the issues that we are raising, and we want them to report back to us in terms of progress made.
And it doesn't have to wait for the next meeting when we call them in here. They must go into this work, particularly the area that deals with the sealing of these mines, these derelict and ownerless, you know, shafts, as well as those sinkholes. But also this thing talks also to the prevalent problem of illegal mining, because if these old shafts are not sealed sufficiently, that's also an entry point by the illegal miners. So this impacts, you know, not only on safety side, but also on us dealing decisively with the issue of illegal mining. Any other comments, honorable members, on geoscience?
Who should seal these mines? Is it the state or the owner's mine?
Put your thing on. Well, the owners is on the mine owners. Geoscience must develop the standards for them to can be able to meet in terms of the, because all what they will tell you in the shafts underground, they would put a they would build a wall, a brick and mortar wall. Is that sufficient? Because that only prevents movement in between shafts. But then the reference here is to look at sealing off completely. So geoscience must develop for us the necessary standards so that the companies must then take that full responsibility. Because those old shafts are still the responsibility of those mines. Some of them, they're keeping for purposes of environmental, you know, work, like pumping out water, safety as well in terms of escape routes, in times when there would be, you know, fire underground and so forth. So yes, to answer your question, our view would be that the mining companies must take full responsibility. Honorable Dexter?
That's the reason why I raised the issue in the beginning, because I think we need to make a clear indication as a committee that, one, the standards are obviously not good enough because people are gaining access to those places. And number two, the monitoring of that and the enforcement to ensure that companies adhere needs to be strengthened.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, but I think here, geoscience's job is to show and look at the places where these things are needed. And the duty of closing this ownerless mine falls under the department. It is the department's duty. I remember last time when mine health and safety were here, they were saying they had a problem with funds. They don't have enough money to close those derelict, those ownerless mines, and also to do the cleaning up of some of the old mines. Therefore, I think here, geoscience was getting these people ready to be able to do all these things. So it is the industry that does not take full responsibility of doing these things. It is geoscience shows them, here are the things, this is what is there, and all sorts of things. Therefore, they must take over and do the correct thing. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other comments?
That's a serious issue that has been raised. And when you find out the cleaning up of these old mines, the owners have run away. Some don't come up to the party. And the baby is with the department now, which is totally unfair, because that money could have been spent better other things. And for example, where this illegal mining, I'm not sure where it's got to now, because it was handed over to the police. And I don't know whether we've had a report of what is happening. But that is a mine that is working, and the owner should be sealing it off. The responsibility is theirs.
Yeah, maybe, Chair. If those mines are ownerless, as you say, then the state has a responsibility to seal them. Otherwise, people will be dying all the time and be sitting here and talking, repeating one of the same things. That's why we should call these people, the department, and tell them that they must do something about it.
It is true that the owners are not known, really.
Honourable members, I think we are agreeing that on this matter, where mines are still licensed to owners, those owners must take full responsibility. In situations where you have derelict and ownerless mines, the state must take the responsibility. Geoscience must assist us in producing those standards and the monitoring mechanisms in order for us to be able to deal with this problem. My understanding is that is the resolution we are taking. Thank you very much. Honorable Khululu.
Thank you very much. Talking about these ownerless mines, are we talking about these 5,000 mines ownerless that the minister was telling us about, that they got about 30 million rands that they've allocated for that, that is for each year? Is that what we're talking about now?
Yeah, you would notice that in the program we have invited the department to brief us, particularly the secretary has distributed to all of us the Auditor General's report, which focuses on these plus 5,000 mines, the mine dumps and mines that are ownerless and derelict, where the Auditor General in December raised serious concerns. So the department is still going to come and address the committee on what work are they doing, how far down the line are they, what resources have they got at their disposal to be able to deal with that. You know, all what the minister in her public statement that she issued in response to the Auditor General's statement was that there's plus 500,000, there's plus 5,000, you know, minds of this nature. So the details we must still get here. That's why in our program we've scheduled, because the Auditor General in that report, which I would encourage honorable members to read, is a section where he made recommendations of what needs to be done. So it's our duty, therefore, to listen to the minister or the department and then take appropriate decisions. But yes, indeed, that refers to the ownerless and derelict, you know, mines and mine dumps, because there are these two things. Because in mines you find the shafts, and then on the other hand you find the dumps that we need to look into. So for those, we will listen to the department in terms of what work have they done so far after the Auditor General made known his findings in that score.
I just want to, I'm glad to inform this committee that, you know, in my area where I come from, Babati, in fact, most of these illegal mining activities are no longer there. They've closed down those mines, and there's no mining activity going on that is illegal now, as we speak.
In the old one?
Yeah, the old one.
Let's not take that as a fact, because there are some areas that you may not know. in that very same area. Let the department, because they are fully responsible for this, come and inform us. I'm glad that you say there's progress, because that's what we want. You know, in us doing our work nationally, wherever you go, when you come across mining problems, you are better placed because you are in this committee. But for us to can have a closure in a particular chapter, then the department must give us details, so that if something else happens, then we can hold them accountable. But maybe we can then, when they brief us on the Auditor General's matter, then you can raise this and ask it as a question, maybe, whether they have sealed off in Barberton all possible, what you call, that they will react to that.
At the time when you know what
I did, did you visit these places? These, or that's fine.
At the time of the oversight visit, we were concentrating on illegal mining, and indeed, illegal mining in Free State was taking place in mines which are owned, and still some of them are still operational. So we didn't necessarily go out to mines that are dormant. The same thing happened in Barberton, because in Barberton our main concern was the illegal mining was more of forced mining, not illegal. Because those people, we were told are competing with the mines directly in the production area, and to an extent of confiscating production equipment for their own use, threatening workers with guns, AK-47s, and so forth. So indeed, our oversight was not directed specifically at ownerless and derelict mines. It was a mixture. So, for instance, in Free State, we didn't go to all gold mines that are closed. We only concentrated to Harmony, where the illegal mining activities were said to have been taking place. Further comments, honorable members? Good. Can we therefore adopt this report? I'm waiting for a mover and a second. Honorable Magakule, Honorable Matibe.
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the report. I, Nomvula Matibela, second the move.
Thank you very much.
That then takes us to
it will flow easier and relevant if we take mine health and safety council annual report. You tell us when you must take it. What time? In terms of the package before you, you would have some work done by the researcher in Parliament, where they were analyzing the research unit, where they were analyzing the Mine Health and Safety Council's annual report. When we were discussing this report, they did give us this information, and let's deal with that report.
should be in two parts. It should be dealing with the Mine Health and Safety Council as a whole, the presentation, and then there's one that is dealing with the inspectorate, where we were even given, oh yeah, that report. We're given statistics on occupational health, causes, yes. Honourable members, it's open for discussion. If there are any specific issues on Mine Health and Safety Council with the annual report that we would want to look into. Honourable Lucas?
I think the biggest problem with the Mine Health and Safety, they're doing a good job considering the manpower. And I think that something should be done to increase the inspectorate, because that seems to be a major, major problem. Because if you haven't got enough, therefore you will not be able to monitor the mining.
Honourable Matilena.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, with Mine Health and Safety, I think they should clarify us when are they filling posts, because with their documents, it says a lot of capacity challenges within the policy unit. And it's capacity challenges all the way down. Here they have achieved 100%, but they also still complain about capacity challenges. So I think they should tell us, because we have been complaining and crying for more inspectorates. When accidents come, then every time there is no, we don't have enough inspectors. I think Honorable Lucas is saying something which is very concrete about having inspectorates. I don't know why. Can those inspectorates come in and fill up the gap? Thank you, sir.
The issue for me, I think, is in the report on page 46 from the Auditor General. It deals with the issue of performance management within the council. And I think given the strategic nature of this entity, given all the points you raised earlier about, you know, the emphasis on trying to make mining a much safer activity, it seems to me that this is an area that we need to make sure is paid attention to.
Page 49.
46.
46, okay.
Because I think in some respects I agree with the Honourable Member that it's really capacity issues, but part of dealing with capacity is performance management, finding out where the weaknesses and problems are. So I think we really need to ensure that the management and the board pay attention to this issue. I would also second the issue of the question of considering resources generally, both financial and human resources, as areas that need to be
Honourable Lucas.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Honourable Matilena.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, I think yes, one of the members. On the matter of the inspectorate and the capacity as you are raising, the Mine Health and Safety Act amendment, as amended, I think it was amended in 2008, makes a provision, because the complaint by the council was that they are unable to compete for skills due to lack of strategies to retain the requisite skills. For instance, they indicated that they have trained, I think, more than 50, you know, people in the inspectorate field. But at the stage when they were reporting, they only had, what, nine left. Others were poached by the industry. When we asked them what was the reason, they indicated that the remuneration levels are not market-related. And the Mine Health and Safety Amendment Act, I can't recall the section directly, does deal with this issue, because they were given a mandate to establish the inspectorate as a juristic entity, which therefore means that it would be regulated in terms of remuneration and conditions of employment outside of the public service arrangement, because that's where they indicated their handicap to be in terms of being able to retain the inspectors. Now, we must find out whether they have implemented that amendment in that act, and if so, how far down the line are they? Because we can't every now and then keep on recycling the same problem of exodus of inspectors from the department. I mean, it's crucial. How many mines do we have across the country? And if you always make reference to capacity challenges, it therefore means that you will never be able to have a safe, you know, industry across. So we need to then, they must tell us how far have they gone in terms of implementing that, because then that was to provide for them to retain, you know, the necessary skills. Honorable Dexter?
Yeah, sure. I think you're absolutely right. The other thing that they need to consider is that their understanding, and if you think about it, the point you're making about the turnover of staff, it means there are two options. So one is to look at amending the remuneration so that people can be paid salary packages to retain them. Or the other is to accept that you're going to have a flow through of people and look at it as a way of developing skills in the industry and saying to people, let them come and work, graduate, come and work for a couple of years, get their degree in the system of a bursary, work for a lower salary, but then move on into the industry. As long as you've got that as a strategy, then you'll always have new recruits coming in each year. But the way they're running it at the moment is sort of stuck in between two stools. And it's, again, it points to this weakness of the management. There's no innovation in the ideas to think, how do we overcome the challenges?
You know, remember when we took the visit to Velcro? And they were almost putting us into a mine without protective gear and that. I think that was a serious statement, and we mustn't forget that, because there were some health and safety people with us.
Chairperson. Really, with mine health and safety, I'm not satisfied, I must say. I'm sorry to say that, but I'm really not satisfied, because I don't know how many years, for years since I've been in this committee, it's shortage of capacity, manpower. But year in and year out, they understand and they ask for more money from the committee that we must increase the budget because of 1, 2, 3. We increase the budget, but nothing happens. And every time when they come, when they present, it's the same story. We already know that when they come in, they are going to tell us that the challenges which we are having is experience and skills. That's all, every time. So I think I'm not happy, I must say. Thank you.
Yeah, well, honorable members, I think, yes, this is one other area that indeed we'll have to pay closer attention to. Because also on the safety side, the amended act had in them sections 85, sections 70, yeah, I think section 70 and section 86. I might be mixing the sections in Prinus for A. 50 and 86, yeah. Section 50 and section 86. The third parliament passed the bill. When it reached the presidency for promulgation, there were approaches made by companies for the presidency not to promulgate those two sections for the implementation with the rest of the amendments and to delay the implementation. Those two sections, one deals with negligence. It basically introduced criminal liability on the part of operators in the industry in the event that negligence has been proven through the investigation and sometimes judicial processes such as the judicial inquiry on a particular fatality. And if it's therefore the negligence on the part of management or the mine is found, then the mine or the manager will be held liable. Then Section 86 was imposing the remedial measure, such as sentences. It's talking to a fine of 1 million rand, talking to jail term of 5 years. We would need to call on the department in this area to appraise us on what is the process, what progress has been made, because we don't want to keep on leaving, you know, sections of the law that are hanging. Their agreement was that there will be a task team to look at the amendments that must come here, if any. But if they don't reach agreement, I don't think that it's a matter that they must be allowed to play around with. We need to, we'll write to them. They must inform us when they come on the 10th. What are they doing with those two sections in the Mine Health and Safety Amendment Act? Because if they don't reach amendment, if they don't reach consensus, then those sections will stand. If there are any other processes, legal processes that must unfold, so be it. So that at the end of the day, because the committee then responded to industry's concerns about the constitutionality of those two sections. The what are these people called? The legal brains here. They call the state law advisors. Confirm to the committee then. I think we need to go into those records. Those two sections are within the constitution of the country, and therefore we need to call on them to give us the report, so that we can then finalize those two sections. If they bring us amendments, we consider those amendments. If there's no agreement, then we basically, you know, write to the president so that the sections as they were must then now be promulgated to be enforced in line with the rest of that. So it's quite crucial, because it's one of the measures that would serve as a deterrent on the part of the industry for them to then be able to pay more serious attention on the issue of health and safety in the industry. The other matter that we need to deal with are the occupational diseases. I would like members to reflect on that. Yes, asbestosis is on the decline because the last asbestos mine was closed in 2001, but we are now dealing with the legacy of asbestos mining in the country. But before I make my input, I would like members to engage on that score so that we then, you know, reflect on it as well. Open to you, honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, asbestosis has been closed. I mean, has stopped, the mining has stopped, but the mine dumps are still there. People are getting killed, people are getting ill because of those dumps which are there. When the wind comes, it gets to the child, that's TB, that's asbestosis. I mean, yes, asbestosis. The other thing again, on when we say they lack capacity, like Honorable Dexter was saying that it's somewhere with the management as well. Their committee here, the meetings which they attended here, it looks like they never had a meeting in 2009. On page 49. The last meeting they had was in October 2008. Then it's April, May, June to July. And the attendance, it's only the first one there which has got no date, who had five attendance. The rest is three, two, three, and one. So how are we really, when working with people's lives and health, that we can help them and save their lives? It's very serious. Because it really looks like it is not functioning. That committee is totally not functioning. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable
Luka,
I think you brought up a very interesting point, because one of the major hazards is tuberculosis, and now AIDS, because HIV and AIDS, and people die of tuberculosis, and many of these people they only find out after they've left the mine, because when they get sent back home, then they find out they're ill, and then it's another problem to prove that they were ill from the mine. So it's a difficult situation. I'm not sure how we're going to stop this bad practice.
Thank you. Honorable Dexter, you have
very much. I think also they need also to report to us about the number of miners that die of AIDS. I think it's very, very important, the point that you raised of HIV and AIDS. We need to get also that breakdown as to how many of them died of AIDS and all that. I mean, it's their responsibility to report about that to this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also, when they come here to, they should tell us how many people are already living in single hostels, because that this infectional diseases, when they are 10 or 3 or whatever in that room, the other one has got TB, the rest of them will have the TB.
Yes,
Yes, I think one of the numbers, this is a very important subject matter, and once more, we will have to set aside sufficient time. Welcome, Honorable Bigani. We will have to set aside sufficient time. You know, as honorable members, you know, are raising the issue of tuberculosis, the matter of HIV and AIDS, because there, not only the statistics would be important, but also to look at what measures is the industry taking, for instance, preventative measures. Are they, you know, workshopping or training, you know, workforce and mining communities on the prevalence of the HIV and AIDS? And other companies, we know that there are some mine houses that voluntarily took an initiative to roll out ARV treatment. They took out that program and they actually are paying. But we need to know who are those in the industry, how many of those, what about the rest? Why are the other companies not coming on board in dealing with this? Because AIDS is quite a serious you know, challenge for the country as a whole. And it's a matter that we need to pay attention to. And Honorable Matibela, the matter of the single-sex hostel, it's, I would say it's an indictment on us, you know, that we are still talking of single-sex hostels 16 years into the democratic dispensation. It's a matter that should not be tolerable at all. I think the industry must be put on terms around this issue. It's a matter that has got its background that could be traced during the apartheid era, because one of the apartheid regime's cornerstones was this migrant labor system, which within it imposed upon industries the requirement for them to house their workforce in single-sex hostels. And then every year they must be sent back to what was seen then as the labor reservoir areas, such as your homeland and your outlying areas. I mean, we can't, you know, be still talking, you know, about this the prevalence of this. There has to be commitment on the part of the mining companies. It's within their responsibility. At the time when they were building these hotels, you know, they were in cooperation with the apartheid regime. When they would determine what would be the complement of their workforce, they would immediately put up these hostels, you know, quickly, and they would pay for them. Why can't they now pay for correcting the situation? We can't overburden the government. When we talk about redress on things that were done by apartheid regime, this also talks to the heart of that industry must begin to also make necessary provisions. We know that within the industry there are companies that again voluntarily and took initiatives to develop housing. They converted their hostels, but to what extent? Because the last we knew was that 60% of workforce in the industry still resides in single-sex hostels. And with prevalence of tuberculosis, with prevalence of HIV/AIDS, you know, it's basically a breeding ground for the increase of the prevalence of these diseases. So indeed, the Mine Health and Safety Council will have to appraise us on progress made in as far as this matter is concerned. Also, there are issues of silicosis. You know, in general, we'll have to look at lessening the exposure of working people to these hazardous materials. And because in terms of silicosis, the reference is on the mine dust, particularly in gold mines. Surely they will have to find engineering solution to lessen the exposure, but secondly, we need to evaluate the quality and the effectiveness of the personal protective equipment. Indeed, these are some of the things that we would need to engage with. So, indeed, we need to spend some time with this Mine Health and Safety Council in looking at that. And other than that, honorable members, are there any other issues that you would want to raise? Honorable
Chairperson, first, we pass the apology from Honorable Makakula. He has been called by his committee that cannot form a quorum to go back to that. That means it's the same thing that we discussed yesterday, the clashing of committees. They don't form a quorum there, then they take him out of another committee. Secondly, Mr. Chairperson, is what Honorable Lucas has just said. I'm not satisfied at all. I'm really passing a dissatisfaction on that. That if you're a mine worker, they say to you, it's a rule maybe, you go out, and if you contract TB after 6 months, don't come back to us. It's your own problem. It is not our problem. I'm really not satisfied about that, because people don't react the same. Some will react in 3 months, and others after a year. I strongly don't accept that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, honorable members?
And especially, this affects rural areas more than any other place, because these people are recruited from those areas and brought into them.
Okay. Right. I think this demonstrates a need that maybe after we received the state plan, we engage these state-owned enterprises, give enough time to each one of them. For instance, we can set aside the whole day to engage one, deal thoroughly, and be able to then expect the implementation of the decisions that we shall have taken. Any comments on the Auditor General's report section? Are we happy in terms of the finances, apart from what you have raised correctly, in terms of understanding, which they have admitted up front as well? Anything else that would arise out of that? Okay. Shall we adopt the report, or do you want to reject it? Any takers? Honorable Dexter?
Well, Chair, as long as it's adopted with those provisos that are raised, I mean, I don't think we'd want to reject the report. But
moved by Honorable Dexter, seconded by Honorable by. Honourable members, then we left with three. Let's take MinTech, because MinTech will flow well. The other two are interrelated, because it's the state diamond trader and the regulator. Hey, young motion. Overweep. So, oh yeah. they will pull. Mentec, hey, the font size of this presentation is too small. It's a challenge. It's a challenge, but okay, let's engage. In any event, the annual report is there.
Even worse, the annual report is
there. Oh, sure. Okay. Yes, Honourable
Deputy. The only issue I have here, which is referred to in the report, is this question of the number of samples, the slowdown in samples that they've been analysing. But they say that's due to what's happened in the industry, the slowdown in the industry. So I don't think it's a function of Mintec. But it is a worrying thing, actually, because it's another indicator of just what's going on in the industry and the impact of the economic crisis, I would consider. But other than that, I mean, I think the entity has done quite well. It seems governance-wise to be managed quite properly. And as it's indicated in here, it's met most of its targets. And, you know, particularly in terms of the research and development side. So I'm satisfied with it.
Thank you.
Remember, these are the people that will give us the workshop on the 14th and 15th of March. Did you find the venue where? Oh, okay. All right. But it's, yeah, it should happen. Although they are going to give us a workshop, but still we will have an opportunity to engage them. But yes, let's look at the annual report. Well, one thing that eludes one in terms of entities such as this, I agree that they managing themselves, their affairs quite well. But you would expect that we are moving towards establishing a beneficiation industry, the downstream mineral resources beneficiation, which is an industry that we would want to, that it must flourish within the country. The initial intention is that all our mineral resources, our mineral commodities must be beneficiated locally, and that by now we thought that they would have been able to look at the required skills for that kind of, an industry. Because from time to time you get told that the country is not ready to can cut and polish small stones, for example, due to lack of skills. And something that I don't think that we necessarily would agree with, because skills are developed. Even the countries that do have these skills, they have taken conscious decisions to develop those skills. And then this kind of an industry has got a potential to create quite a huge number of jobs. on a sustainable basis. If you particularly look at countries such as India, countries such as China, yes, labor standards are low in those countries, but the fact of the matter is that they did develop skills and they have created those job opportunities. And we need to then impress upon MINTEC. We know that the matter of the beneficiation strategy is still being processed, but it's an industry that we must keep a close eye on in terms of dealing with the scourge of unemployment in the country. So MINTEC will play a very pivotal role to also anticipate, the work that could be done in establishing that industry, to look at what skills would be required for the country and how long will it take for us to build those skills, that skill space within the country, and what commodities, can easily put us in a proper footing in terms of this industry. For instance, if you had listened to Minister Rob Davis in terms of the industrial strategy action plan, you can't miss the fact that even there, beneficiation of our minerals is merely mentioned, and they even talk about minimum beneficiation of our mineral resources, then you don't know what is entailed, whether they are referring to washing and treating of our commodities immediately after they've been extracted. What about converting them into end products, such as watches that we're wearing, gold rings that we're wearing, chains that we're wearing, and then the rest of the jewelry, and also the other use that some of our commodities could be used for. I mean, there's quite a number. For instance, we are exporting chrome in this country to China. When it comes back, stainless steel, we buy it at exorbitantly high price, and that doesn't make sense. And of course, it's easier for the industry because they just extract minerals, put them onto the market, and off they go, export market. It makes quick money, quick return. But for the country, it doesn't assist us in terms of being able to add value into our commodities so that, well, one, we can generate the necessary income, and two, we can also create the necessary jobs that we so we are in need of dialing in the country. So I think we need to impress upon MINTEC that we must be proactive in terms of dealing with these kinds of situations. I think that's one area that I've picked up. Honorable Dexter, Honorable Lucas.
No, Chair, I mean, I'm not sure that we... Well, let me put it this way. I think MINTEC doing a lot of research, and I think it performs, is probably one of the leading types of entities in the world, if you look at the type of research that you... But it's not MINTEC's job to, once they've developed technology and everything, to exploit it. And I think that's where the problem lies. The problem lies in the industrial strategy side of things. Because once, for example, they've done work, as you say, like in stainless steel or the platinum metals, the establishment of the industry that can exploit that technology isn't the function of MINTEC. But it shows a weakness in the sort of coordination of us doing research and development and everything, but that not being exploited. So perhaps the question should really be posed to the department as to, what will they be doing differently along the lines that you suggested, because I think the point you're making is absolutely right. But I'm not sure that it's, a MINTEC issue.
Honorable Lucas?
I think I agree with that fully, because what is really happening is that the understanding of beneficiation from the mining houses and what we understand is not always the same, because they believe they're doing some sort of beneficiation from extracting underground and turning it to a exportable commodity. However, I looked at the last page of the BITTEC report, and where it comes to small-scale mining and beneficiation, there's no one responsible. The last, the cover page of it, the last, the back page.
Okay.
There's contact numbers on it. And at the second to last, is there small-scale mining and beneficiation.
Mm.
It's vacant. So it means there's, there's nothing really happening there. But if you remember, Mr. Chair, I had requested that we have a special meeting on beneficiation. Let's look at beneficiation and this kind of common understanding of what is happening. And of course, the ball, we'll drop the ball, not with us, this is before 1994, when it was a good idea for the then government to export all their commodities and get back. Now, we have a long way to catch up. I mean, if you look at Italy has gone a long way in manufacturing jewelry. We look at India, they do the small diamonds. We'll have to catch up, but it's going to be more costly because they did it at that time, and then we want to compare prices. So we've got to say we want to do this thing now, because if we do it in 10 years' time, it will be more costly.
Honorable Ivani.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think based on what you said and what the other members have said, there does seem to be a problem with MINTEC in terms of their information system and their performance reporting, which doesn't seem to be complete in terms of the report that you got. So perhaps you should request more detail in terms of what is going wrong or how far are they in terms of improving their systems, notwithstanding the fact that possibly some of their problems could be created by entities such as the CETA, which is not really operational. So at times you might find that they want to get to a particular level of performance, but they have problems related to issues of CETA, which could also in turn affect then what you've been saying in terms of their skills development processes. So perhaps you should take that into consideration as well, but do get the answers from them to get a better understanding as to what are they doing in terms of the Auditor General's recommendation. Thank you, Chair. I think we should accept their reports and depend on the fact that we get more answers when we actually have a meeting with them.
Honorable Bivani moves. Are you seconding Honorable Lucas? Good. I think, Honorable members, this again, you know, confirms our view that there's a need for an elaborate engagement with these entities so that we realize the necessary benefits out of the work that they are doing. And indeed, if needs be, we also look at possibly influencing the direction that they must take, including some amendments on their mandate, because at the end of the day, we would want them to yield the necessary results that will make a positive contribution in the development in the country. And the fact that on the matter that you raised, Honorable Lucas, that somebody who must assist the department and the industry on small-scale mining, a very crucial and key area, which will enable us to do many things. For instance,
It will enable us to also begin to realize transformatory agenda in the industry. And how else do you do that if you don't work out approaches that will assist the new entrants in the industry? And the new entrants are more located in the small-scale mining arena. Also, we are aware that the small and medium enterprises are going to play a pivotal role in terms of job creation within the country. So, therefore, you need to make sure that entities such as this pay close attention. And again, back to the issue of beneficiation, they must also assist us, you know, going forward. We have indicated, Honorable Dexter, our displeasure with the, not in a manner that rejects the industrial strategy as proposed, because it's out there for an engagement. But we have said this, that we would need more elaboration on the strategic approaches for the mining industry. And that I would encourage members to read the thick document. I mean, you would have to spend some time going through it. But what the beauty about it, they've got certain sections that are devoted to sectors. There is then a section that is devoted to mining. That's where then they are found wanting. When we engaged them, they said no, the engagement with the department was not yielding, you know, fruitful results, and as a result, they are still engaging to elaborate further. But I know on beneficiation, the problem might be that the beneficiation strategy itself is still not yet approved at, you know, a level of cabinet, for example. And so, which means it's our responsibility to make sure that we influence that process. Because that, industrial strategic action plan is going to influence the direction we're taking in the development of enterprises across the industry. Even there, matters that are pertaining to funding and funding models are being discussed, in which case small-scale mining is also, you know, is a matter that also needs to be included there. For instance, we're talking of ITCs and these other finance development institutions, whose behavior is no different than your commercial banks. And how do you then term them to be development finance institutions if they would ask collaterals, if they would, you know, ask exorbitant interest on finances that they avail to establish, you know, industries, you know, across, you know, the sector. So we need to engage with that document and then be able to make our own input into it, of course, with the department. Well, the department must inform us what role are they playing in influencing that strategy, so that at the point when it is ultimately adopted as a country strategy, then we are there to make our own contribution. Honourable members, with that, let's move on. The tea is thought to be at 11:30. It seems that we're galloping. The whole day that I've set aside was too ambitious. All right. I think very important. Honorable members, let's take the State Diamond Trader. And Secretary, I don't see the signed Auditor General's report for the regulator. You remember, it followed afterwards. It was circulated at some stage, but I thought that in your package it will be there. It's a reason that we nearly rejected the submission by the state diamond regulator. I don't seem to see it here. Whilst we're discussing the diamond trader, can you ask your office to get us that? It's in the letterhead of the Auditor General. It's a South African diamonds and precious metals regulator's annual report. You remember the annual report which made, which created quite a storm in the committee, whether we discuss it or not discuss it, because they tabled to Parliament the report with the unsigned financial report from the Auditor General. So it was circulated, and I'm saying to the Secretary, I don't seem to pick it up in the documentation. Whilst we're discussing the state diamond trader, let's ask your office to look at that document which was forwarded afterwards. Do you have your...
It's the Auditor General report. It's, I think it's 8 to 10 pages. Only 4 size document. Which has got a logo of the Auditor General and it's signed. It's the Auditor General's report, which is... Let me show you. Where's this thing? The state diamond.
This is the trader. Where's the regulator? TFIN. Sorry, honorable members. I just want to make sure that when we discuss that state-owned enterprise, we discuss it with that report in our possession.
No, assistance. Honourable members, can I suggest that we take a 5-minute body break?
Oh, yeah. indicated that they are prioritizing the rehabilitation
To what extent have they gone? Was the going to receive a report of how many of them have been rehabilitated and how many is still remaining for them to be rehabilitated? But also, we view this as a serious hazard on the part of mining communities. Those rural areas where the asbestos mines were, like if you look at Northern Cape, you look at Northwest, you look at Limpopo, you look at Gauteng, those communities are still exposed to asbestos mines. And we want closure, proper closure of those mines. But secondly, you also have workers who still come back to the industry to claim for asbestosis, because asbestos has got this long latency period, which means after a person has left the industry, it will only manifest itself after 15 years, after 20 years, after 30 years, depending on the strength of the body of a worker, the metabolism system of a person, to the rest of the resistance level. But indeed, we are still registering in terms of the statistics that we received in those cases, which is a legacy of asbestos. But also, the other problem we have is the emergence and the increase of silicosis, which is related to the actual operation of the mine. And we want the miners and consultants to appraise us properly on what solutions are they looking at, engineering solutions. Are they providing people with proper, personal protective equipment that are effective to be able to protect, those that are exposed, both workers and people who are staying within the country. But also the other serious problem that we're going to be grappling with at this fourth parliament and find the lasting solution on is this fall of ground and the rock pest, which accounts for more than 41% of mine deaths and accidents. And indeed, our analysis of that, of this kind of occurrence, is that since mining was started in the 18th century, the fall of ground has been formed in the mine. Rock beds have been formed in the mine. Seismicity events have been formed in the mine. The tremors of the soil have been formed in the mine. And we say in this fourth parliament, we must find the lasting solution. And how are we going to find that? It's through elaborate research work that must be done by both geoscience and SIMREC. Because internationally, we know that there exists technology who can anticipate, the seismic events. So we need technologies that will enable us to then detect any, the occurrence of the seismic event. And when it comes to the fall of ground due to, gravity induced, that area requires a paradigm shift on the part of management as well as on the part of workers, because we need to change production methods, and those changes will include loss of, profit margins due to less production targets that we must chase, and on the other hand, the loss of production bonuses on the part of the workforce. That's why we're saying across in the industry, we would need a paradigm shift so that we can then save lives. More importantly, to save lives, we can lose a little bit of profit, we can lose a little bit of production bonus, but lives are irreplaceable. And as a result, our efforts will be concentrated in dealing decisively with the fall of ground and the rock bed.
Let's talk something else. It's about the, you remember that time, it's about those mining lawyers, how they were going to protect the mining community, like Coffee Sunday, those ghost mining towns you mentioned. What happened about the ID now as the committee? Do you all follow up on that?
Well, once the department briefed us on their strategic plans on the 10th of March, we will see whether they are making reference to the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Royalty Act, which has long been promulgated, but there is an agreement between the Ministry of Mineral Resources, the Ministry of the National Treasury, as well as the President, that the implementation of that act must be delayed at the request of the industry, given the the recent economic kind of situation, which is understandable because there was a possibility of loss of jobs and all of that. So to lessen the impact of the economic crisis, then they also looked at this, this law that it must its implementation must be delayed. But we'll put it back on the table to see what would be the correct timing for that act to come into operation, so that the resources that shall have been accumulated from that, so from those royalties, can therefore be plugged back into the industry in areas such as your rural areas, the labor standing areas, because there are people who are no longer working for the mine, but they cannot work anywhere else as a result of the old age, as a result of some accidents that they have contracted and the diseases they have contracted in the mine. So we would need to then look at what are the intentions and plans of National Treasury for those reasons, for that reason, and see which pathway can be brought back in the mining community. The department is coming here on the 10th for the strategic plan. They will be here on the 10th, and next week, what is next week Wednesday?
I'm Oh, okay.
And then,
I just want to
tell you.
One unit. So you go to a university in London. It's also good for your CV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep it up. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm bored. I actually have been suffering from depression after I've been studying because I've been had so much time. Now I feel like I don't have anything to do. And I've been wondering why I've been feeling so tired. Because you think you feel tired when you're studying.
Yeah.
I've been exhausted. So I went to the doctor and he said, no, the problem is that used to occupy 4 or 5 hours a day. Now you don't know what to do with yourself.
So he's trying to figure out what he must do
if
that actually makes
so
time.
So I'm
going to
take it easy.
That's the problem.
So Can you tell the report? We finished.
Was that a vote of no confidence?
No, we just were assisting you. Fulfilling your mandate.
Did you follow the necessary procedures?
Can I take that on review?
The secretary is new, so at least it's out of no fault of hers part of the documents you have. I don't know whether you find it there, but it was in that post. It's got an emblem. It's kind of a parental report from the body. But it's a loose A4 document.
Okay, and
she's
the
older
Welcome back, honorable members.
Long live the chair.
Some of the members have requested to quickly go to attend to some urgent matters, and therefore we will continue. We now get to the State Diamond Trader annual report, and I would open the floor for members to engage with this report and follow the same procedure in terms of the adoption process.
Doctor, I'd just like to ask, because possibly I might not have been part of the committee then, if you have actually had any engagement with them at all.
Well, they were here in talking to the annual report. We did ask them some questions, and they responded to those questions, yes.
We sent them back last time because the report was not signed by the auditors. They came back after that.
That one was the one of the regulator. Diamond and precious metal. This is the one that we are looking for now. They did come back with that. But that one we'll discuss after this. Honorable Dexter?
Chair, I've got two issues. The one is it's a non-compliance issue on page 31 under the PFMA, where it was recorded there by the Auditor General that they've not complied with section 51(1)(a)(i), that to do with internal control. I think that's something that we need to make sure is highlighted so that we can go back to that in the coming period. But the more substantial issue, Chair, we spoke about the beneficiation. I'm a bit concerned that the problem with the beneficiation may be that it's falling between too many stools. You've got this state diamond trader, you've got the regulator, you've got the department, you've got Mintec. You know what I mean? It seems the beneficiation is like scattered in a lot of places. And you know what happens when that takes place? Everybody thinks it's somebody else's responsibility. So I think we should just flag that issue, that we'd want to have an assurance, because as you've indicated, beneficiation is such a key thing, that we can be put at ease that this issue is not going to be neglected for that reason.
Thank you, Honorable Dexter.
Chair, you know what worries me about the I've never had an opportunity to have an engagement with them. But what worries me about their report is that they summarize everything. They don't go into actual details in terms of, like, for instance, there's challenges around legislation. They just mention the sections and summarize what the issues are. Like, for example, here they talk about section 59B provides for a selection of a representative sample, a run-of mine basis of purchasing. I mean, what does that sentence tell me?
Well, where are you reading from?
I'm reading from this King Diamond Trader in your. Unfortunately, no, it's not page.
Oh, from the presentation?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The presentation.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if. Why I was asking if they have actually come to you is to hear if they had on the presentation. Did they go into substantive details? Because if you had to look at this and perhaps take the Auditor General's report, you might find that the Auditor General's report could give you much more than what we have here. This doesn't really, the challenge is that the way they put them here doesn't really give an area of concern, of an area of intensity in terms of us being able to. There's no pages, unfortunately, but it's under the challenges faced by the FDT. You know? And I particularly look at the challenges, and I'm relating to the fact that I asked the question if you were engaged with them. I don't know. I'm doubting to. For example, I went through this report, but I'm doubting to actually support it. If you look at the client performance data, it tells you that the FDT has 105 registered customers, of which 68 made purchases during the year. You can't just throw statements like that without substantiating them. You understand what I mean? So to me, this report doesn't really give me a true reflection
to for me to be able to say I'll support this annual report. You know? And for example, under their financial performance, they're just giving overall figures and the time frames concerned. But telling us about capital expenditure for the year amounted to 873,000, and then in brackets for the period 2007-8, I'd say for now, for a lay person like me, it's saying nothing. It's saying nothing for me to be able to say I support such a report and say, like, there's nowhere where they tell you, in the meantime, what have we done for the period of, for example, 2008 to 2009, 9 and 10. It just doesn't, it summarizes everything here. It's not a convincing story to say you'd support, you don't know what you'd support here. If I had to say I'm supposed to support this report, I'm just being honest here.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think this was a presentation, and when they present, they talk to you. Therefore, the comrade, honourable member, the correct thing which we are supposed to adopt is this report. This is a summary by the report. When you sometimes, if things are not talking to this one, because we've got this one in order for us to see if it's really talking to this one, I think that's the way. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Thank you.
No, I think you both are correct, honorable members. For the benefit of honorable Bika, because I think the first question she asked was very proper, whether there was an engagement, and indeed there was. For instance, when you look at the issue that you have raised this section 59B, this run of mine, we discussed the matter at length. The diamond producers would bring a bag, mixed bag of stones, because the law requires them to offer 10% at least of their production to the state diamond trader. The aim and the intention is to both support the small-scale miners, but also to support beneficiation exercise. Now, the industry on one hand would want to pick and choose in terms of what production must they offer, although the law is quite clear that you're talking of a mixed bag, which means the small and the big size, you know, stove that must be offered to the state. So in terms of the industry, they would want to take the most higher grade production for their export market and give and offer the state diamond trader the less grade, which is what the state diamond trader does not accept legally. So the second challenge they raised, which was also in the newspapers, was the price. Who determines the price? Industry wants it to be market related, and even in that scope of market relation, the state diamond trader ask questions, who then determines what is the market value? Is it through collusion by industry players, or how do you exactly determine that? So by law, there is a body which is established to basically determine the price. But also within that act, there's a provision for the settlement of disputes that would arise. There's what they call independent evaluator in the act. Now, there's now apparently a court case where industry, some of the players in the industry, are taking the state diamond trader to court. That's the challenge they're talking about, you know, there. And indeed, we need to pay attention to look at that act, which is called it's called S.A. Diamond Amendment Act, and it talks to, you know, these provisions, and we need to find out whether you know, the state diamond trader complies with that law, and whether the industry complies with that law. Because the other challenge that the state diamond trader has raised, that the industry is raising, is that they are unable to sell their products, because of the fact that the state diamond trader is underfunded. Because for them to buy, to acquire this 10%, they must pay for it. Now, the industry would offer this 10% of production, but the state diamond trader would not have money to buy, you know, this production that is offered to them, so that it can sell to the small scale miners and the beneficiaries. So they would wait until there's a sale before they could sell. And if there's no sale, then the production accumulates in the possession of the state diamond trader, and the industry can't put their sale to the open market. There are other allegations that are flying around. So the state diamond trader agreed that they would come back and properly appraise us on their function and their work, because we wanted to know, what are these challenges in terms of funding? Who's supposed to fund them? You know, is the act clear on where must they acquire the funding? Must the department, for instance, we need to look at, for instance, during this budget, how much money is allocated to this state diamond trader by the department, so that this entity must be able to function, you know, properly. So yes, you know, for your benefit, that's why I'm going to deeper into this, because they did take us through that. And fortunately for us, there was a media article which was basically, you know, attacking the state diamond trader. Mm-hmm. But then they must still come back to us. Because also, again, with them, it was all the whole question of the challenge of capacity. To an extent that the turnover in terms of the CEO, they've just appointed someone else, you know, I think two other CEOs had left. If my figure is correct, but also you have that challenge in that score as well. So they need to still come back to us on that. I mean, here we would need to take that act, put it before us, look at the mandate that the state diamond trader has, look at the allocation that has been made by the department, and be in a position therefore to steer, you know, this entity. Because I think it's correct what the Honourable Dexter was saying in terms of beneficiation, because that 10% production is offered to the state diamond trader precisely and mainly for that purpose, so that they can offer it to the jeweler, so that then those operations can then you know, produce the necessary end product. So yes, Honourable Member, you are quite right, because the presentation itself is not going into details, but both the report and the responses they've given us and the questions that we had asked from them were able to give us comfort in terms of concerns we had. Mm-hmm. Honourable Matibela.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. It's like this one, if they were here, then they would have told us why is it like this, because the Auditor General picked up no quarterly reports on the progress in achieving measurable objectives and targets for the strategy objective 5 to ensure that DPS technical staff transfer skills to newly appointed state diamond traders. Because if they were here, they would tell us. Because these people, then they go away, they age, no transfer of skills to the younger people who will be able to work here. If they were here, then they would really give us some answers for this. Thank you, Chair. Because every time we talk of skills, I say, but here they don't train. They don't say whether they have transferred skills. Thank you.
I think one of the members, I would make an appeal that let's in anticipation for the engagement, because here, even under legislation, they're mentioning some challenges which require us to fine-comb that act. If the department does not raise these amendments that are required, it will be incumbent upon ourselves to take those initiatives. The direction, we will get the direction from the meeting of the 10th in terms of what is it that the department is proposing on the legislative framework. But I'm not sure, because there are secretaries, new members who were deployed in other committees. At one stage, very early, we had the department here giving us a list of all laws, the acts, the minerals, MPRDA, this and that and that and that, a list that says these are the acts and regulations. Maybe let's ask you to request once more. I know that in the submission, in the presentation, they gave us a summary of what is entailed in each act. I'm not sure if you will have that in your files, but you need to write to the department in liaison with them, because there they gave us the laws that are applicable. The easiest route would be for you to write to the department to ask them on what is the legislative framework. Oh no, by the way, here's this number. You can talk to her. Because what we would need are the laws that are applicable in this ministry. So Mandomiso must be able, or whoever in the ministry must be able to give you those that list, so that you can circulate it to members. That way also you will find the acts that establish the state diamond trader, the acts that establish the regulator, the acts that talks to miners and safety council, everything that we're dealing with. So that as and when we engage an entity, we look at the mandate as reflected in the law that establishes that entity, so that we can then see, because in the course of this parliamentary process, the fourth parliament, we will have to revisit mandates of the state of the government. So in doing that, we'll have to do that in relation to relevant acts that are applicable. So I think for those members who have joined us after that exercise, let's have a second bite, although it will not be to the same magnitude, but it will give us a list of the laws that are applicable, but circulate it to all members so that everybody's minds are fresh on those. Honourable members, any other input on the state diamond trader? Yeah, yes.
I think here, the fact that you're mentioning that we need to relook into as a whole state-owned enterprises in mineral resources in particular. Perhaps it might have to be a meeting of its own, because then we'll have to go to the experts to try and identify what the problems possibly are. Because if we're going to details about that, it's going to take us back again to some of the issues which we are not really yet discussing in the committee in terms of mining. mining dumps and so on and so on. It's going to take us quite PMEs, these small traders, you know, perhaps we need to take it as a commitment that we need to perhaps look into detail into issues of state-owned enterprises. And what are we saying?
Yeah. No. I'll support that. I think overall, all of the members, this entity has got challenges. The new entity, granted, it went through its formative stage, it's now in operation, and we therefore need to ensure that we assist them to be in their proper footing. Look also at its governance, you know, structures as well, to see whether the board is functioning properly, and indeed the whole question of funding, and where necessary, you know, we assist the department to basically put this entity into its proper footing. With that in mind, shall we adopt or reject the annual report? Over to you.
Before we reject or exception.
Did they explain why this entity is not registered for income tax?
When
they're
here.
Page 31, first paragraph 9. The entity had not complied with Section 61, but has the explanation for the entity is here.
Page 31, paragraph 9. Is that the one issue which was raised by
the owner of SAS? When they were here, did they explain why they are not registered for income checks? Non-compliance with applicable legislation.
The paragraph you're referring to, Honorable Member, you say paragraph 9.
No.
Mm. It
says the entity had not complied with that section,
mm-hmm.
of the PA, which requires the entity maintains effective, efficient, and transparent systems of internal control, sales payment related to VAT were made late, resulting in fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the form of interest and penalty charges. Furthermore, the entity was not registered for income tax. Let's go to their presentation in terms of the legislative framework. Yes?
Sorry. It goes back to what I was saying, that this presentation does not necessarily talk to this report. If you look also on page 32, for example, there again you also have something about their performance and information systems not being in place. The accounting authority's responsibility for the performance information. The accounting authority has additional responsibilities as required by those sections of the PFMA once again, to ensure that the annual report and audited financial statements fairly present the performance against predetermined objectives of the public entity. But if you look at what they are saying here in terms of their funds, the main complaint they have here is the fact that they have a lack of state funding. So it's partly why I was saying how much engagement did take place for us to can say we'll support this report, because, you know, the findings of the Auditor General are not being related to in this presentation to say this is what the Auditor General found, this is how far we went in terms of trying to resolve issues. Even in terms of findings on performance information, now it might not necessarily once again be their problem that they are facing challenges in relation to their performance information system. Like I related the issue of Twitter, for example. They already said there's no quarterly report on the progress in achieving measurable objectives and targets for the strategy and objectives I mentioned there to ensure that the BS technical staff transfer skills to newly appointed State Diamond Trader staff. So there's forever an issue of which these cannot support to say these are the efforts that we've put in to try and improve the situation, or these are the challenges we are facing were impeding us because of particular reasons that they should be giving.
Yeah, Chairperson, can I make some additions also on the challenges here in the report? Does not reflect in the big report. In the annual report, it does not reflect. There are no challenges.
All right.
If you look at again, this thing is not pages are not reflecting here. The governance framework. You know, I think honourable members are correct. They say here in their statement, the governance framework complies with the provisions of the PFMA and aligned with King 2. A very bold statement. And then they talk about the provision of the strategic direction, management structures in place. But when you go to the Auditor General's report, the very same issue that Honorable Charlie raised, once you're not registered as a state entity, you are not in compliance with, you know, even the King 2 report, because King 2 report talks to need for compliance with also legislative framework. So indeed, I think what we will have to look at is to write them a letter, postpone the adoption of this report, to say to them, we want them to appear before the committee, and they must, in particular, give us the report on remedial action they have taken on the non-compliance issues raised by the Auditor General. Because indeed, even in their presentation, they didn't say to us, the Auditor General said one, and this is how we're not saying to them, correct it now. But they needed to give us comfort in what measures are they putting in place to can be able to correct those. And I think indeed that's one area that is glaringly identified. And they must also talk to us about the challenges they raise themselves on funding. What is it that they have put in place in order to ensure that those challenges are dealt with, you know, properly? So I think we need to call them back here and postpone the adoption of this report, because you have got grave concerns as members on number of issues raised by the Auditor General that are not responded to. Can we close the matter on that subject matter, Honorable Matuera?
Again, on page 52, I think that's where they talk of also of VAT. I don't know whether it's the one that you're talking about, Honorable Charlie, is the one.
No, Charlie was referring to page 31. Honorable Dexter was referring to page 31. Honorable Megan spoke to that, which is referred to page 52, because in their presentation, they do make reference. So, absolutely. Under their challenges, they are mentioning that. So they must come back and tell us
penalties and fines on late payment of VAT, KSUN, SCL, UIF, and normal tax.
Yeah.
It comes up to this amount.
Okay.
So can I just add something?
Yeah.
You see, one of the things you must be careful of just approving this, you might find a situation where, for example, SCOPA is also going through this Auditor General's report, and they might want to take these people for interrogation, if I can put it that way. And you'll find that we've approved this report, and yet they've got issues with them. We should also flow back to the media anyway. So I would really strongly recommend that you put it on hold, let them come in, and we satisfy ourselves, instead of being faced with a situation where you might find that if we don't address it as mineral resources, the Portfolio Committee of Mineral Resources, SCOPA comes and attacks them on what we've approved, then it won't reflect correctly from our side, which is a possibility.
No. I think we've already taken that decision that we're not adopting, and that they must come back and satisfy us on the issues raised by the Auditor General. In some instances, it would be possible, because we're not financial gurus. We may pass it on the basis of a principal political consideration and their mandate. But SCOPA, because they're dealing with number crunch, rhymes and sense, they, even on all of them, the ones that we even have approved, they may pick up things. So that's their work. But I think it would be, dereliction of our duty if we, even when we see that there are areas that are not responded to our satisfaction, we pass the report. Indeed. So that's why we say that we will write to them, call them back here, but they must come prepared, in terms of, I know one of the remedial actions was to replace the CEO. It's the CEO that is there. It's not long in the what you call, but then it's for them to say to us that is the case, and to also talk to us about the other misdemeanors that are identified. So our decision, honorable members, is that you're not adopting, and we're calling them back here. And quickly,
unfortunately, have to leave out to fetch a child. But I just wanted to say on the next one that I haven't had a look at it. And although there are some minor issues and that duplication, I accept it to one of the regulators, so if you can record that.
No, that will be fine. Thank you. We found the signed auditor report on that one.
Yeah.
So the secretary will reproduce it and circulate it to all of us.
Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much for your support. Honorable members, let's move straight to that last one. So let's move on to South African Diamonds and Precious Metals Annual Report, and deal with that. Okay. Honourable members, therefore, that presentation is before us, and we managed to get the audited, the signed audited statement, which was circulated to members. What happened to my presentation?
Well, a lot of newspapers supplied the interim presentation. Did you take it away? Can I for now circulate this for that you can see that indeed,
although it was circulated to members, just to remind members, you would see that there is a signature from the Auditor General, and for the report of the Auditor General to Parliament on the financial statements and performance information of the South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator for the year ended 31st March 2009. So indeed they have sent it to us. It was circulated, but satisfy yourselves. So that then, but it will be recirculated to yourselves once the each of them get an hour in front, look at it as well. Yes. Can we engage with the presentation? Other members said that they in support of the No, not necessarily, no. Even the state diamond trader is the one, it was established after the amendment of the act. Yeah. Normally they will make a reference to the section that establishes the report. But fine. It's really a statement later. Yeah. Let's talk to it, honorable members.
Compliance is a great requirement.
I mean, in terms of the presentation.
That says financial statements were not subject to any material amendment resulting from the audit. Then later on, when you read, you find that there was no compliance to the CFMA. I don't know if it's my understanding or I see it differently perhaps than what I'm supposed to be seeing. But there always doesn't seem to be a correlation in terms of the auditor general saying exactly what is he complaining or is he not complaining about financial compliance? Because I think it's one of the key areas that perhaps we might have to look at a different approach in terms of skills, required skills in public financial management. Because you end up not knowing if the problem is with the particular entity or department, or is it because of the very reason that there's a lack of capacity or a lack of financial management skills.
Are you referring to the
from this report?
Point 13.
They say key governance responsibilities. And once again, they bring out the issues of the PFMA tasks, the accounting authority with a number of responsibilities concerning financial and risk management and internal control. And if you go down and you look at point two, where it says quality of financial statements and related management information, and also the next one that says timeliness of financial statements and management information. Point two says the financial statements were not subject to any material amendments resulting from the audit. Now, that doesn't say that was relevant or not relevant to what needed to be identified as either a problem or a challenge or something that they did not comply to. And then it says the annual report was submitted for consideration prior to the tabling of the auditor's report. It still doesn't say, was it complying, was it satisfactory? But if you go and open, like what you were looking at previously, then you find that suddenly they are not complying with the PFMA. I'm just mentioning it here that sometimes also, perhaps the way the auditor general reports, it must start becoming clear as to, if he's saying he's making recommendations, it must be clear where the areas of concerns are. And the recommendations must actually indicate the areas of concern for improvement. Because if you look at key governance responsibilities, yes, it's more an issue of saying, yes, these were submitted. So what? If he uses this as a checklist, for example, it's fine. He can use it as a checklist for himself. I think what we want to know is there compliance or not? And if there's improvement on what he has actually recommended for compliance.
I think if you look at page 37 of the of the report, that's where the auditor talks to us. The first point that we get attracted to is the opinion. Because that's where the auditor general concludes. And he would then give you an opinion. He would then tell us whether he is withholding, you know, his support for the financial statements and reports submitted to him, or does. For instance, the opinion is, he says
in his opinion, the financial statements present fairly, in all material respects, the financial position of this entity and its financial performance and cash flows for the year, then ended in accordance with the basis of accounting determined by the National Treasury as set out in Accounting Policy Note 1 and in the manner required by PMFA. So, now there, he's not disowning. But then he then goes on to say, despite this opinion, because when they look at these finances, in their opinion, they fairly present. They didn't pick up irregularities. But having said so, there are these concerns, which concerns are meant to say to the department, if you don't correct this, in the next audit exercise for the next financial year, if these things are not corrected, we will then disqualify. We will basically approve your statements with a qualification. So it's like a recommendation to say to them, comply with this. These are the shortcomings that we have identified. Now, what is important with this entity, when you go back to that document, under the checklist, you would see that the matter that has been raised by the Auditor General is on your left column. The response and the reaction by management is on your right column, which says immediately to us, we've looked at the concerns raised by the Auditor General. This is how we are going to remedy the situation. Let's go back to point one. Point one, the Auditor General, that Y is yes and the N is no. So which means the Y is accepting and the N is rejecting. So therefore, on that first one, the Auditor General is accepting. On the second one, the management on the right hand, you know, especially the issue that you raised, the financial statements were not subject to any material amendments resulting from the audit. Then the management says, by the way, you were not here, because we had asked them, what does this mean? What are there material amounts that the Auditor General picked up that could not be accounted for? And then they came back with this very response to say that this relates to mainly the 10 million rand. You remember the debate about the writing off of this 10 million rand? Because you asked, what is this? The 10 million rand that was transferred to Mintec from the regulator to Mintec, agreed and it was approved, which had been impaired or provided for as a write-off. Management has decided to prepare financial statements on a monthly basis to address possible major changes during the course of the financial year. But our question was, how could you not, this is a substantial amount when you talk 10 million, and you say you have transferred it to another state-owned entity. Was it a loan? Was it a contribution? Was it a donation? What was it? And apparently, there was an exercise which was under the auspices of this regulator during the time when they were dealing with the, which what was called the Black Diamond at the stage. There were specific units that were established to combat that. So therefore, the regulator required funding. Instead of them going to the National Treasury, they then looked in-house. And then here, the regulator had this amount of money, and they gave it to Mintec to develop those strategies. Now, but the Auditor General could not pick up a resolution to start with properly, you know, passed in their board, for this amount. Yes, the record. But also, when they said properly recorded, was to, like the question we asked, what was this? Was it a donation? Was it a loan? Or what? It was hence the writing off. So they said it was a transfer for that work to be done. And they were not expecting the money to be paid back. But then in their initial resolution, they did not reflect that. Hence then the auditor picked that up
because it's a substantial amount of money. But then they gave that explanation, and then they were going to go back and remedy the situation to the satisfaction of the Auditor General. But also, in future, if they engage in similar transactions, they will take a proper resolution. For instance, the Auditor General will look at board minutes in comparison with major expenditures to see whether there was sanction from the board for those monies to be expended. And if he cannot find a resolution corresponding, then he would raise that as an unaccounted for, you know, expenditure until there's a satisfactory explanation. It doesn't mean that the 10 million grand is gone missing. It can be traced that it was from the regulator to Mintec, but then the resolution was not, you know, talking to that aspect, to the conditions and the terms. So I'm saying, therefore, in this one, when we look at it, you need to look at that left side, compare it to the right side. Because right side says, we as the regulator, we are taking this action to remedy what the Auditor General has raised in his report. Yes, Honorable Miller.
Chair, then that brings me to another issue now. That the SOEs, we said that we're going to look at them and see how their operations are run. But this then brings up the issue that here and there, a picture is given that the boards are operating too freely. There isn't a clear area of performance of which the boards are accountable to. And there's no way where I've heard us saying, let these board members come and give us their roles, functions, and areas of performance. There's something very loose about the boards, and as a result, here and there, they appear to be acting as private entities where they do as they wish. So perhaps you also need to look into that when you look at these also SOEs, you also look at the boards, the structuring of these boards, are they within the legal frameworks that are required now. But it does also appear that we also don't seem to, I don't know, maybe I don't know, but there doesn't seem to appear anywhere where there's a government legislation or common legislation that actually gives us a leeway to say, this is how boards of this nature are supposed to be operating. And in most instances, you'll find that we hit at the department, but the boards always get away. Hence the problem we're faced with CETA. So that's another area perhaps we need to consider of these boards themselves coming in and actually coming to make presentations to us so that we understand how they operate.
Thank you,
Honorable
Charlie.
On the auditor's report, irregular expenditure, as disclosed in note 21 to the financial statement, irregular expenditure to the amount of 890,000 and something was incurred, as the proper tender process had not been followed. And the management commented that a proper tender process could not be followed due to the urgency of appointing the internal auditor. However, various service providers were approached to submit their bid, from which a successful bidder was awarded the contract. The existing contract expired at the end of March, after which a proper tender process has been followed. The tender here will be issued after job has been given to whoever. Yeah.
Point number?
9.
Okay.
Irregular expenditure.
Okay.
You can?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is something not clear. The whole thing, okay? This side, the auditor's piece of it is irregular expenditure. And how the tender was given. That the due process was not followed.
Point 9.
Yes, for nine. The auditor's report.
Oh.
Is that as the student could want to find just an irregular expenditure? There was this irregular expenditure. So he explained how was it irregular. And on the right hand side, the management comment. The management said a proper tender process could not be followed due to the agents of appointing the internal auditor. However, various service providers were approached to submit their bids, from which a successful bidder was awarded the contract. The 16 contract expires at the end of March 2010, after which a proper tender process shall be followed. The first offer the job and later advertising. Yeah, I don't know how this could be accepted. Each javelin a blade, then you throw it and then you correct it and collect it that side. That's what is happening.
I want to check on some people. So our diamond and precious metal regulators and whoever, they are too loose. They have free operation. Another report where I say, we're not saying we want to adopt this report. But in
Ali Bangabu. No, they must
come. And they must come back with one point only. To come and clarify what they have done in terms of the Auditor General's concerns.
Yeah, I think honorable members, that's why I said look at because they have responded. It's either we say this response for short, we want to know from the period they were here to now what happened. For instance, on this issue. They are admitting here that the Auditor General picked up that they didn't follow, and then they say the current tender expires now. Whether that means they have shortened it as a result of the Auditor General's concern, or originally they issued it in those terms, it's another matter. Now, I think the question we need to ask ourselves is, in instances such as this, what then?
One tell us that the existing contract expires
in March.
At the end of March. Yes. After which a proper tender process shall be followed.
So that's why I'm saying that our duty is to interrogate the answer. Because that's the answer that when they come back they will give you. Because they've given you in writing. Now, the question I'm posing under these circumstances, who has got powers to do what? If there's irregularity found by the auditor, what then happens? Do we? I think you need to note this. Let's find out, because this might not be the only instance. Do we take what action to remedy the situation? Because the tender is out. It's nearing its end because it's now March. But it doesn't obviate the fact that the tender was issued irregularly. They are admitting to that as an entity, as the auditor raised it. Now the corresponding question is, instead of bringing them back here, they will give you the same answer. What are the remedial actions that are open? Do we refer the matter to SCOPA? Do we take an action? Are we empowered to impose sanctions? Or do we say to the minister, act on this? So I think we need to to check this, because so that when we bring them back, we bring them back quite clearly,
yes,
with clarity in our mind.
I think they really need some because they can't offer a job and they should attend
it. Can I ask one of my friends as well, this deliberation?
I don't think they should offer, they should give somebody a job and then later offer it and start issuing tenders. Once they do that, there's something wrong going on there. Something going on there. It's this javelin that you're about. You throw and you follow it, you collect that side.
So, the proposal is that the minister must act on this matter and must give us a report on the actions she has taken.
You could report, Chair Wick. You could ask them to come back before I say the minister must act. Come back and explain to us.
Yeah.
And if we're not satisfied, then tell the minister.
I'll tell
the minister first before we ask the minister to act.
I remember from one of the members who were here, if you remember, we spent some time on this. They even, spoke of this relevant person recusing himself in the process. So we engaged them on the issue. That's why I'm saying when they come back, they will give us the same answer. Because damage is done. So when we were engaging them, because we asked them, how did this happen? And then they then went into details in terms of somebody sat in the adjudication committee who at the end had an interest, and that person recusing him or herself and all of that. But the fact of the matter before us here is that the auditor picked this up and the auditor raised it. Now they say here, yes, it happened, and for you, members of parliament, this tender under question is coming to an end in March. And the new one on the same job will be issued following proper processes. Now, if we want to bring them back, we must be clear. It's for the rehearsal to hear one and the same thing, or is it time for us to just give instructions to the relevant authority to act and to receive the report of the action taken?
Again, non-compliance is advocating legislation.
Non-compliance is applicable legislation. Section 76, foreign blockers of a PFM requires the regulator to comply with any regulations or instructions issued by the National Treasury. Entity administered a bank account on behalf of the Department of Mineral Resources to receive cash donations and disperse these amounts on behalf of the department. Donations of over $1 million were received into this account, and the ZTN and a balance of 412,000 rand was remaining on the account. The donations were not paid into the relevant revenue fund as required in accordance with Treasury Regulations 21.22, as which have been required for the department. Furthermore, contrary to Treasury Regulations 81.2.1, the entity did not obtain necessary Treasury approval for the opening of this account.
And furthermore, the entities of the committee did not have
a quorum.
Did not hold a quorum for 3 meetings of the 5.
Read this, I said when you read this slide, read that slide.
committee has taken note of this oversight and as a result to ensure proper attendance at all planned meetings. But what's surprising, they take decisions. Take decisions, and after that, they want to make sure that they will have over quorums in all meetings. After taking decisions, and such a big amount that is involved, without even the minister knowing. The regulator opened a separate bank account, which, in the opinion of management, was equivalent to the revenue fund as required in terms of treasury regulation. All the funds previously deposited in this account have since been used up, and the account in question has been closed. But the minister did not know about this.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, this termination. Chairperson, the termination was just a bluff. Because you can see, yes, they terminated, but they waited until end of the contract arrived so that they can use that money. And we, in front of us, they said they picked that up and that person was dismissed and so forth. But it's not true because the money was going out into a different account but being used. So I think if the minister knows, she must also tell us what she did about that. Chairperson. This report is until 31 March 2009. Now, from April until at least, let's say, November, what happened in terms of everything that is wrong here? So we've got good reason to call them back, but not repeat the reasons why they came. Because when they came, they said, we are going to do this, we are going to do that.
When you say 31 March, the report was tabled by the auditor September.
Now, what I'm trying to say.
We discussed it in November.
Yeah, that is the area I think I wanted us to raise as a concern that have we given them enough time to can say they could have done anything? Would be another question. For resolution in relation to these problems. Because when the chairperson says they mustn't come here and come and repeat the same story, do we then say that they have had enough time, or are the time frames fair towards them to can say that they could have resolved some of the issues, or there could have been some turnaround strategies in relation to some of the Auditor General's report challenges that have been identified? If they come now, obviously we're going to be saying to them, this is what you said when you were here. And this is what the Auditor General's report says until September. Now, between September, where are we now? We're in March, so to say. What has happened? I think that explanation between that almost was a period of what? 3 to 6 months? Is what we should actually be specific on. If it means writing a letter to them to be specific to say, we want to know what remedial actions have been taken from the period September 2009 until present towards March 31st, how differently would they be able to present what has been given? Because I'm also just worried now about the time frames.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chairperson. They said here, they themselves here said they picked that up immediately and terminated the contract. But the money kept on going there according to AG's report.
Yeah.
they terminated, because they picked it up that time and terminated the contract. But they did not terminate their money, because the money was getting into that account. Thank you.
You know, honorable members, I want us not to see. This is Carlos Garapera here. You got power in your hand. I don't want us to lament, because proactively, this entity looked at the Auditor General's report. And the Auditor General glaringly said, you failed here, you failed here, you failed here, you failed here. Irregular here, irregular here, irregular there. Now, they then coming to us said, this is how we remedy the situation. And there's no other answer, really, that I'm looking for from them. For instance, as Honorable Matibela says, you terminate the contract in March, but the money has been used on a regular basis. Is that right? Is that what we accept? Here, they're talking, for instance, here in this other page, you know, about a member who was appointed for his expertise. He declared his interest, but nevertheless, he continued, you know, to sit there. Now, some of the things they did them knowingly that they are wrong. So, but they continued. And they say now for future, right? That we will in future, you know. But now the question that I'm posing to us, I don't think that we need to be, because come end of March, this thing is history. 1st April is starting a new financial year. Now, the question I'm imposing on us, do we continuously recycle these responses, or do we home in on actions that must be taken? Because by their own admission, these things have happened. Now, I was happy when an honorable member was beginning to gravitate towards the direction of the minister acting. And instead of listening to them coming back with the same answers, listening to the minister that have taken this action to make sure that if monies must be recovered, let the minister look at the matter and recover public money, which was spent irregularly. If heads must roll, let the minister take that decision, because we can't take that decision. Ours is to instruct the minister that act on this. We are not happy with the remedial measures that they say they are taking. Because they say, oh, by the way, we have not complied. Yes, we did not comply, but we shall comply, you know? So that's why I'm asking this question, why bring them back here? And then same, they will give us, for instance, if they come here, they will motivate more, the same answer. When you sit and listen objectively, you will discover that it's the same answer, but with a different angle of motivation. Is that what we want? If we do want that, then of course we can call them back and pass this thing. But if we want to send out a clear message, I was happy with the proposal that says, Minister, act. We are not going to pass this report because of the remedial measures that are put by this entity are not satisfactory. For instance, the issue of going in a meeting that does not correct, and knowingly that the meeting is not correcting, you take decisions that have got financial implications. And you then when the Auditor General picks that up, you then say, no, in future we will go and take decision in a correction. It's like us here passing a legislation without a quorum. We can't say to the President, no, Mr. President, in future when we look at the legislation, there are dire consequences. We can be taken, you know, to court by the parties that are aggrieved. And you know, and the cleaner. So I'm saying, let's be decisive members. So let's not find
more and more motivation and extra. If we're not happy, let's put it on the table that we're not happy, and that we say to now the accounting, now the responsible authority there must deal with the issue. Honorable, you know, Chairperson,
we are sitting here deliberating as ANC. Once again, the opposition has left us. I just want that to be noted for the record. Because they've left us saying that they support whatever report we support. Now we're deliberating on these issues, they're not here. So it should be noted for the record that they leave before meetings end. And this part of the crucial discussions that we've had, they were not part of. We are here as ANC only. Tomorrow, they said they'll accept the decision, but it's sometimes not good. It's not good because now we ended up deliberating on these reports in detail, which I don't think they had expected. I'm just saying you must just note that.
You raised your hand when we were asking whether we still want more motivation or we want action.
Oh, no, I was going to say, now let's have a meeting with the minister and tell him what is our decision. And it's like that she must act now. Because if you remember last time when the people were here, when he started grilling them, before we could say you are not accepting the report, the chairperson who was sitting there, she was the first to walk out to run away. Yeah. She was the first to run away. That was fun.
Is it, yes, Honorable Mjadi?
I just want to say, Chair, I support what Honorable Mjadi is saying. Let the minister come.
I would not be honorable if you are not supporting
me. Yeah. Honorable members, I think our decision on the matter is that we are not adopting this annual report of the SA Diamond and Precious Metals regulator. And that a letter must be written to the minister for her to particularly take necessary actions on the dissatisfying remedial actions suggested by management on the non-compliant areas raised by the Auditor General, and that the Minister must report back to the Portfolio Committee. I think let's close it in that. If we say come, talk to us, all of that, she must act, then come to us after she has taken the necessary corrective measures on the issue, and a letter to that effect. On both instances, Secretary, the letter will go to her to say that we did not adopt the report on the State Diamond Trader because we want them back like we have decided, and that secondly, we did not support this one because we want her, firstly, to take corrective measures, and she must report to us what are those corrective measures that she's intending to take before we could then adopt the report. It is almost in all of these areas. Whilst it's a very good thing that the regulator did respond to each and every problem raised by the Auditor General, but at the same time, we are not satisfied as the committee, and hence the minister must then intervene in this situation. Honorable members, that was the last annual report
You would recall that the annual report, budget for 28, we dealt with it, we passed it, and it's recorded in the ATC. So we are now remaining with these two. We will give them the reasonable date for them to come back in March on this issue. The pity that Friday is just around the corner. Otherwise, if they were able to come back, especially the State Diamond Trader, to come back on Friday, it would have been a perfect day for us to engage. But we'll look, we'll create a space in our program so that we listen to both them and the minister on these two annual reports. But I remember then the next issue, which I don't know how we're going to handle it, relates to the minister.